Welcome to the Wealth Building Made Simple podcast with Philip Washington Jr. Today's episode is brought to you by StonehillWealthManagement.com. Today, Philip talks about the root of money. Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. And now, here's Philip.
We are back with another episode of Wealth Building Made Simple, brought to you by StonehillWealthManagement.com, my wealth management company where we help people take their money from the present and guide it to the future, protecting it from all the space debris, i.e. inflation, that can tank our shit. That's also brought to you by WealthBuildingMadeSimple.us, my website, where I put out my thoughts about money, emotional intelligence around money, the evolution of money, and yeah, it's there. Premium subscription, $200 a year, very inexpensive, and you know, I feel like, man, if I had read that in college, I would have not needed a finance course. I'm saying that very non-humbly. Anyway, today we're talking about the root of money, right? I've been in the root of money, right? This is just my evolving thought on money, right? The cool part about having the podcast and writing weekly is like my thought continues to evolve, right? It's a lot like if you read a book, any book. I'll read a book a different time and I'll evolve it. And just humans, like, we evolve our thoughts. So this is me continuing the evolutionary thought around money. But where I first want to go is here's the core idea, and I'm going to tell you how I built to it. So money changes, money evolves, but in the present, when you're here and now, you don't really need to think about too far into the future. You just want to buy the obvious form of money today, right? And then when the next obvious money becomes obvious, start buying that when everybody's unsure about it, and you do it in over and over and over and over again, right? And so I'll explain what I mean. That'll make sense down the road, but Where I first want to go is, like, what is money, right? And money, at the core of what it is, we learn in our textbook that it's a unit of account, it is a unit of account, but we also learn it's a store of value. And not so much in the current way that we think about money, right? It's more a way to measure value, right? Or a way to account for value, or a way for governments who created the money systems that we use to track transactions, right? It's like time, right? You know, what is time to a squirrel? You know, like the time that we use on watches doesn't mean anything to a squirrel because it operates, you know, on an internal clock, right? It just notices change and kind of flows it, but it doesn't have a need for watches and clocks to survive, right? We invented our measurement of time to have a unified way to organize civilization, right? So money is the same thing, right? Because squirrels and all other animals and plants don't need money to transact or operate or survive or get what they want, right? They operate with natural forces, but humans, right, we think on a different plane than animals and plants, and so we get to create things and, you know, and civil technologies and symbols that mirror, right, nature's things. And so money is just a unit of account, right? A way to, like I said, measure transactions. It's completely separate from value, right? And the reason why that's important is if you don't understand that idea, then you believe in a man-made idea of what money is, which causes you to become a slave or an oppressor in the system, right? Let me explain that further. Like, we know, and one of the things I talk about a lot is there's plenty enough resources for all of us to survive on the planet, right? Like, before, you know, I don't even get into before humans, after humans, but let's just say, like, the Earth is a lot older than our collective conscious memory of it, right? The history that we have is limited because, right, it doesn't mean there was nothing before it. It just means that's our history. But what we do know in our current history is the Earth is very old, right? Older than what we can remember collectively. And so, whatever it's doing, whatever nature's doing is working, right? It's going to work before our memory, right? And after our memory. It's a better system is what I'm saying. But when you take humans and you say, all right, cool, we can create a mirror of that system and we think it's going to last forever, right? We don't have the same level of intelligence as the intelligence that created the Earth, right? So it's ephemeral, right? It's full of bugs, you know? And so it has a expiration date. And so because of that, when the system breaks and is not working properly, people who have bought into that system, those with power, this is where the idea of sacrifice comes from, right? And you'll see it in all old civilizations. They would sacrifice those with less power to maintain the system, right? You didn't have to sacrifice people, right? You could have just, like, moved to a different region where you had more resources. And those that had a lot of resources could have just unlocked some of their resources to everybody else, and it would all worked out. But people bought into the system, right? And a lot of times it was put in place by previous generations, so they didn't even know where the origin of the system was. They just kind of bought into an idea and then built on it. And so, like, the people were willingly, who had less knowledge, less power, be sacrificed because they didn't know. And the ones that ran the system would sacrifice because they didn't know, right? They bought into the system. And so, money is the same thing. We look at today and we look at the rich getting richer and the poor getting poor. And you look at well-meaning people at the top that are doing things to the system that's exacerbating the problem, because I genuinely feel like they don't understand the origins of money. And then I feel like the people at the bottom, if they knew maybe if they became aware of what I know, which I'll put out the podcast, then the oppressors couldn't oppress them, because they would know what money is, and they would go, oh, it's just an idea. And I can believe an idea or not, right? Because, like, you look around, there's lots of ideas. We talk about Bitcoin, talk about Tesla stock, right? Right? You just, the ones that are innovating and building wealth outside of the current system, with technology and everything, and I speak specifically for America, right? People who live in America that have access to podcasts, this information, everything, in a relatively short time, they can break a generational curse and raise their level of wealth relatively easy because the infrastructure is built, right? So I'm saying it to say, we're going to get into the foundation of money, right? But I think at the core of it is to understand that the foundation of money, or the root of money, right, man-made money, is that it is just a unit of measurement for transactions, right? That's really all it is. Value is completely separate. And so let me build out from there. So if you say, okay, money's a unit of measurement and it's measuring transactions and relative value. So let's call the foundational money of the world is the dollar, right? The dollar is just measures transactions. So if I want to go buy some crawfish, it's measured by like $7.99 a pound. Right, if I want to go buy a full Bitcoin, it's $70,000. If I want to go buy a house, right, the average house in at least probably my neighborhood is $500,000-$600,000, right? Whatever that number. I think that's the national average too. But so like the dollar is just a measurement, but the different things that we spend the dollar on has different relative values. And so. If you want to understand like the flow of money, so when you think about money as that, and so you think about the man-made monetary system, which is a dollar, right? And you could believe in that as a store of value or not. That's up to you, right? But then there's things that you can buy with those dollars that are valuable, and that's how you protect your value as an investor. And so a good guide to help you navigate the flow of money is the yield curve, right? So what is the yield curve, right? The yield curve is government interest rates because, again, if governments create money to create man-made markets, stock markets, real estate markets, all the kind of things that we measure in money, so if they create money to create markets, we need a foundation, right? Like in order for us to walk, we got to have something to walk on. So I use the yield curve as a foundation and say, all right, if we're measuring it in their foundational money, let me use it as a benchmark reference point. So I say, what's the short-term interest rate? So if you keep hearing about the Fed raising or lowering interest rates, we're talking about the short-term interest rate, like the three-month treasury bill. And so that right now is maybe like 5%. So you go, okay, 5%. So I can leave my money in short term and earn 5%. And then you got the 10-year government bond interest rate, right? Which right now is 4-something, maybe 4.2, but is lower than the short term interest rate. And so what the information that lets you know, because the government has more control of the short term rate than the long term rate. The long term rate is invested in by participants in the man-made created market, so pension plans, insurance companies, mutual funds that buy bonds, other countries, individual investors. So it's tougher for that interest rate to be controlled. But you look at it and you say, okay, so I can invest my money today at 5%, or I can invest it in the future. I can go buy a 10-year bond and get a guaranteed 4%. You go, pause. That doesn't make any sense, right? That was done intentionally by the central bank to like tighten up money, right? For various reasons, and I won't go into it on this podcast, but to make money tight. So you go, all right, cool. Like, so they want to shore up some short-term money for whatever reason. But then you zoom out and you go, all right, so I use it as my foundation, but I don't have to play their game. Meaning like I don't have to choose their money, their value. Now let me look at it and let me go, all right, cool. Like I don't want to do 5%. I look at, because like housing, other things I want to buy are going up at a higher rate than 5%. So, and that 5% is taxable, so that's going to get eaten up. So then you go, what are some other places that I can invest money that's going to potentially grow better than 5%, right? So then you may say, right, what is Dallas real estate doing, right? What's gold doing? What's gold likely to do? What are S&P 500 stocks doing? What's Bitcoin doing, right? What's venture capital doing? And so as an investor, you are looking at all your options and saying, all right, I want to place my money in areas where there's a bigger gap between the short-term government savings rate, my savings account rate, and the long-term rate. Because what ends up happening is when you think about the evolution and the flow of money, think of it like a learning curve, right? So you go short-term risk-free money, and then you go long-term, like you know, they call it venture capital or a venture capital, but you call it like the innovative capital, right? Things that are doing new things, and you put that the things that are more uncertainty. So that would be like Bitcoin, AI, Web3, Tesla, financing like new things, right? That are far out there that have lots of opportunity, right? Because you look at if you want to just put venture in a bucket, right, and then you want to average out what is the yield on venture, right? That's 30% plus a year, right? Over a decade. I'm just pulling numbers out of averages, right? And if you average it out, right, there's going to be ones that do way more, ones that go out of business. But I'm just saying, on average, you go, okay, yeah, that's a big gap, right? So I can 5% here, potential 30% plus over here, right? And as the market moves closer and closer toward the venture of today, right, those returns get realized. So think of it this way. This is I'm trying to go finance without going finance nerd. If you were to buy a bond, and bonds sell at a discount. So let's say you I'm gonna do a simple math. You want to buy a bond that will pay you 10% yield over 2 years, right? So it's 5% a year, but let's call it, you know, 10% yield over, but it'll pay you over 2 years. So you will say, all right, cool. I'm gonna give you $90,000 if the bond's a $100,000 bond. I'm gonna give you 90 grand, and then in 2 years I'll have 100 because you'll pay me $5,000 a year, right? 5% a year. You pay me $5,000 a year on the bond. And so, like, that's how it works. So the closer you get to the ending payment, the lower the potential return, right? So meaning, like, in year one you got 90, but in year two, I'm doing simple straight math. I'm not doing compounding, so super nerds, you know, chill out. But in year one, you start with 90. Then in year two, you got 95, right? So the return is the return potential is less moving forward because time has happened, right? Meaning when it was longer out, you had a higher return, 10%. Now that it's closer, the return is lower, and the bond price is higher, right? If interest rates don't change. So that's the same thing with venture. You know, Apple 10 years ago was not worth $3 trillion. It was worth a lot less. But the gap in return potential was bigger. Now, as it's closer in the market, like nobody, that technology has matured, what Apple offers, is no longer venture, right? Venture meaning nobody no longer questions Apple's dominance and profitability. Matter of fact, Apple's on the other end of the evolution. Apple is now the 800-pound gorilla in the room that people are afraid of. And so as an investor, you go, you know, maybe I still want to own Apple from a conservative level relative to cash because it's probably going to earn more than that. But if I'm looking out on the far yield curve of investing, and I want to target those 30% plus a year returns, I got to go out to the new world, right? The crypto, Bitcoin, innovation, those kind of things. And so that's the journey of value, right? I call it going from order to chaos to order, right? Meaning, you have the established order today, or what's considered safe. And if you leave your money in the established order, and things are moving forward always, then that's not going to be a great place for your money. You gotta flow with money. Because what ends up happening when absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? So like, when there's order, think of order like a united perspective, right? Like one perspective. And so one perspective is cool, but one perspective is not super creative, right? Because you need chaos to break it up and then reshape it. And so if a very simple example would be, if we never went from order to chaos, order to chaos, order to chaos, then in our memory of when we started, right? And we would still be in caves just with fire, right? Because that was enough at that time. We would not have evolved. So, but we needed like some chaos to throw in the mix, and then help us kind of continue to rebuild, you know, civilization, you know, to meet our new wants, needs, right, and desires, right? And so money just follows that path. Money is like the, you know, or let me not say money, but like value or wealth, but money being the technology is just like, money tracks the journey of wealth. That may be a better way to say it, right? If money is a unit of account, money is just tracking the story of wealth, meaning wealth going from order through the chaos to the new order, right? And rebuilding it. And so going back to money and money markets, stock markets, all those things being a man-made idea, when you believe in it, like I mentioned before, you think of when times get tough with an economy because the man-made idea is breaking down, and you believe in the man-made system, then you go into survivor mode, which means like you think you got to take from somebody else to get what you want. This is how wars happen. Not just physical wars, but, you know, wars of opinion, you know, cold wars, all these kind of things. People go into survivor mode versus wealth in creative mode, right? Creative mode meaning you are working on solving new problems. This is the foundation of why I talk about I like to invest in the creative money, or the creators that are bringing new money to the system, because survival mode is just like reshuffling what's already existing. It's why why there's a belief in sacrifice by those that have bought into the system. But in a creative mode, you go, no, there's plenty enough, right? All we need is our minds to reimagine how the world is and just reorganize things around or bring things that didn't exist into existence that are the wants manifested. And I don't mean that spiritually. I just mean like, if money's not a real thing and just a unit of account, then money can be anything, right? And let me give a very real idea. You think about, I was telling my 13-year-old son today, or yesterday, or today, I was taking him to school to picking him up, and my foot was tired. And I was going, son, at this point, I feel like driving a car is like the equivalent of a horse and buggy, right? Because like I don't like doing long trips. I don't, even when I pick y'all up, I'm tired of putting my foot on this pedal when I have an awareness that there's a self-driving car where I can just like enjoy myself and drive and feel good. I'm getting very, you know, I say this car thing is, you know, super, super outdated. Well, Elon Musk, you know, had that idea well before I even thought about it, and he brought the idea into a physical thing that I can actually experience. And so now I would willingly give my money to his corporation to buy that thing, right? I will transact, and the financial tracking system will track my money going to his money and keep tabs on it, right? And it's and since I'm not the only one, and there are lots of people that are saying, I want that. Now you have the Tesla that you can pay $100,000-$150,000 for, you know, a Tesla, and that value like manifested. Not in, like in the shares too, is a $1 trillion company like in a decade, right? And so I'm saying, you know, where did that money come from? Well, where does any money come from, right? You know what I mean? And I've done episodes on like the fact that the current system is always leaking money to keep it going because they have to continue to expand that money supply to, you know, it's, if you don't think about money as money and you think about it as an idea, right? And you have the people at the center of the system continuing to spread the idea, right? And then when there's less faith in the idea, they got to spread more information about the idea, right? Think of the information as the money, right? But what ends up happening is if you're evolving, if they're spreading the money and they're wanting you to put it back into the old system, well, there's always people who awaken, who awaken the money, right? I call them like, genius is just not buying to past ideas, an open mind, right? We overthink genius. Genius is just somebody who's open, right? They haven't closed their mind to buy into old ideas. So there's geniuses in all different domains. There's geniuses who can walk in multiple different domains. But I'm just saying, genius is always awakened in times of imbalance because like the pain wakes us up, right? We go, man, this system doesn't feel right. It don't feel like it's serving everybody else. So like somebody like Elon awakens, you know, in his domain for his system and does that. And then there's financial geniuses that awaken and they create a monetary system that can't be controlled by middle people called Bitcoin, right? Another, you know what I'm saying? So you got all these individual collective people awakening to solve problems that are painful to us. And so those collective mindsets working together autonomously and independently to solve problems like evolve into an economy slowly over time. So I'm saying like that's happened since the beginning of human history. And when you understand money as that, as sort of like this abstract movement of wealth across time, it becomes real easy, right? And I know I hope I'm making it sound simple, but my main thing is just like break your idea, you know, like if you have a computer, if you don't turn off your computer every now and then, it starts running properly, right? If you don't refresh your beliefs and renew your mind periodically, then you got, you know what I'm saying? Like you got man-made beliefs built up of man-made beliefs built up of man-made beliefs. So when you get something that's an answer to a problem you have right in front of you, you can't see it because you got all these like dying beliefs stacked on top of each other. So you just refresh, right? Think about the world differently. And it won't be as complicated if you just refresh, right? So I hope this helps. I may continue to, you know, iterate on the root of all money, but money, like some people may say, so are the people at the top bad? No, I'm not judging anybody. Like, I'm just saying, like, I'd much rather live as a human than a squirrel, right? So I'd much rather have money in markets than not, because it does things, right? You need three things. The trinity of civilization is you need to have governments that keep the peace, right? Keep the laws that we agreed on in place. You want to have businesses that make the things. Right, you need to have money that like circulates that keeps track of the value exchange. So you need all three things, but since we're humans and really we're energy, like energy cycles, it goes into balance and out of balance, in balance and out of balance. Governments go from too centralized to decentralized. Business go from way too big and powerful to less big and powerful, right? Money goes from way too concentrated in the hands of a few to equally dispersed, right? And so as an individual investor, you're like weaving through those dynamic forces. But if you confuse it with, if you confuse what I call confuse man as the creator, right? Instead of the invisible force that animates man as the creator, you get very confused, right? So I'm just saying like value and wealth, which mean the same thing, like go from entity to entity to entity, right? And this is the way the system works. And so just like just follow the flow of money by understanding that it's abundant and it continues to follow creators and problem solvers, each generation other generation. So yeah, enjoy yourselves.
Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.